This podcast is part of the Acast Creator Network.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hello and welcome to The Stand with Eamon Dunphy. Now, in the wake of America's pretty disastrous departure from Afghanistan, and indeed in the wake of the Trump presidency, which cast Americans' relationship with the rest of the world into some considerable doubt, the issues arise for American allies all across the world, the Trump presidency, and now an apparently weak Biden administration would raise serious question marks for others who depend on American solidarity to survive. And it is also America's evident weakness and divisions is in stark contrast to the increasingly assertive China, led by President Xi, which continues to make hardline statements and indeed, in many instances, hardline actions, notably in Hong Kong, where they appear to have torn up the agreement they had with the British government, struck when Margaret Thatcher was Prime Minister. It was supposed to last for 50 years, but it hasn't. It's done with. And we're joined now from Taipei in Taiwan by William Yang. William is the contributor to the Irish Times. He's the East Asia correspondent for DW News in Germany. And he's a welcome guest always on The Stand. William, I note that Kamala Harris was in Singapore and she had talks with the countries, neighbouring countries to China, including and in particular Taiwan. She said Beijing continues to coerce, to intimidate and to make claims to the vast majority of the South China Sea. She described these claims as unlawful and she added, the United States stands with our allies and partners in the face of these threats. Now, there are 20 million people in Taiwan. It appears to be a flourishing and real democracy. What are the people in Taiwan making of this latest apparent step back into isolation by the United States?
I think the statement, as always, it's consistent with what the Biden administration has been making since day one when they came into power in January. The world, however, I think, has been having a little bit more doubt about the durability of the so-called U.S. Commitment to regions that they have claimed to be committed to. Given the withdrawal from Afghanistan, and then the process during which we have actually seen some very chaotic and unfortunately fatal consequences of their withdrawal. And I think that paints a very different picture to the people in Indo-Pacific who are the who were the audience that Kamala Harris was trying to speak to. But however, I think, interestingly, in Taiwan, what was taking place in Afghanistan didn't really have a lot of sway or, I think, influence on their confidence in the United States. I think one of the reason is because the government here is also very quick at responding to Chinese state media, Chinese government's claims that Taiwan should be worried about how the United States ended its involvement in Afghanistan. Yes. Like, one of the biggest difference that the government here and also many experts point out is that Taiwan is a democracy comparing to Afghanistan, which is a war-torn country for decades, even before the United States involvement in 2001. So, and then because of the fact that the U.S. is indeed consistent with its increase of attention, its involvement, its engagement in areas surrounding China, the circumstances of the U.S. involvement was also is also very different from how the U.S. got involved in Afghanistan, which essentially in the very beginning was to seek revenge for what happened during 9/11 and try to took out the Taliban for trying to offer refuge to Osama bin Laden. So, like, adding all these circumstances together, and then given how neighboring countries in the region were all very cooperative and also at the same time having a very similar attitude and perception towards China, the people of Taiwan actually, I think, was very not very affected by what's happening in Afghanistan. If anything, the situation and the style of withdrawal that the U.S. Has displayed only strengthened Taiwanese people's will and also their understanding and their realization that not only do they can they not completely count on the U.S., they should also focus more on strengthening Taiwan's own defense capability. So I think this because the Chinese state media actually made a huge noise about the comparison between the current situation in Afghanistan versus what might happen to Taiwan.
Yes.
So that topic was actually one of the biggest talking point, not only in Taiwan and China, but also around the world, because a lot of the media analysts were also making this sort of kind of comparison because of the fact that the one of the biggest reason why the U.S. withdrawal from Afghanistan is because they wanted to shift its focus and resources back to Indo-Pacific and especially the regions around China. And South China Sea is definitely one of the key battling area where everyone, all countries, not only just the U.S. and China, were trying to fight and wrestle for the control and the influence.
Yes, and you could argue also that by increasing its focus on China, that it will strengthen, as you suggest, their resolve to protect Taiwan. Nevertheless, in the Trump presidency early on, before the Wuhan virus situation became a threat, Donald Trump called President Xi a good friend. He also visited North Korea. That in itself was a dramatic change, particularly the visit to South Korea. And the other sort of issue to be considered here, the way China broke its arrangement with the United Kingdom in relation to Hong Kong. What is happening in Hong Kong now? How severe is the crackdown? We know that prominent people in the movement for lifting oppression in Hong Kong are now imprisoned by the Chinese. What is Hong Kong like now, and what do people in Taiwan feel when they see the swift action of the Chinese in the face of international opinion?
So what has happened over the last few weeks is that a lot of the major civil society organizations that have been viewed as playing a pivotal role for holding the civil society together over the last two decades have all one after another announced their disbandment. And the decision to disband came after each of these organizations became the target of the attack.
Yes.
By the state media. And then what followed suit was them basically either being officially warned by the police for maybe facing investigation under the national security law, or they simply could not think about the risks that they might have to take and the risks that their members will be facing if they continue to exist as an organization. So instead of resisting and holding on, they had to bend towards the pressure and disband by themselves. And even after their disbandment, Hong Kong government would not just end the crackdown right there. They have made it really clear to including the Professional Teachers Union, which was one of the first organizations that disbanded over the last few weeks, and then also Civil Human Rights Front, which is the biggest umbrella group of civil society organizations in Hong Kong that also has been organizing some of the biggest anti-government or pro-democracy rallies over the last two decades. These two organizations have been named and warned by the government that even after they disbanded, their members and also their leading figures would still be possibly facing investigation under the national security law. And then the latest target of the ongoing crackdown on civil society organization is the Hong Kong Alliance, which is the organization that was founded to support the fight for democracy inside China. But then now, since Hong Kong was handed back to China, their most prominent role is to organize the annual Tiananmen Vigil in Victoria yes. Park in Hong Kong. And as we know, since 2 years ago, the vigil has not been able to go forward with government approval. And even this year, the organization's vice convener was even arrested the day or the morning, actually, that the supposed vigil was going to take place. And some of its top leaders are currently in jail facing charges, not even under the national security law. And the organization has been requested by the police to hand over all their information, including their interaction and also their financial exchanges with organizations outside of Hong Kong since 2014. So if they cannot produce and provide all those information and records before September 7th, their current vice convener, who was already being released on bail facing some other charges, could be put, more charges could be added on to her and also other leading figures. And also there will be a very high amount of fine that could also come with that.
And Jimmy Lai, who was a very wealthy publisher and believed to be untouchable, he is in prison, isn't he?
Right. I mean, since the national security law came into power, he was actually the first leading figure that the government decided to target and
yes.
make a statement of. It definitely has a lot to do with the style and the kind of pressure that Lai was able to produce before the law came into effect. He was one of the most outspoken critique of the Hong Kong and also the Chinese government. And the level of his critique often went so far that you would imagine what would be the kind of responses that the Chinese government would do when they decide that they wanted to go after him. So he was made an example, and what followed is the closure of his most prominent pro-democracy newspaper, Apple Daily,
yes.
And also the parent company of that paid newspaper was also facing essentially a purge by the government, and most of its assets have been frozen. So right now, the fate of his business empire is basically over in the real sense.
Now, has that resonated in Taiwan? As the Taiwanese people watch this, and also, according to Kamala Harris, Beijing is continuing to intimidate and to make its claims to Taiwan a major issue. Is it right to say, William, that the Chinese feel even more strongly about Taiwan than they do about Hong Kong?
Definitely, especially to Xi Jinping himself.
Yes.
He has made it very clear repeatedly since he came to power in 2012 that Taiwan is the essential final piece of puzzle for his plan to so-called revive and rejuvenate the great Chinese dream. And that is to have an empire that controls essentially some of the most important waterways and also strategic positions right now around the world. And that's exactly where Taiwan situates. And the refusal of the Taiwanese people to respond to a lot of the offers that he made in the early days of his power is actually now turning into an impatient response from him,
yes.
Which is essentially that he is now adopting a very much intimidating and also a threatening moves, all kinds of different threatening moves to try to squeeze the space for Taiwan to interact and operate in the international community, but at the same time, enhancing the pressure, security pressure especially, that Taiwan is experiencing even on a daily basis.
Yes, and I'd like to ask you in detail about that. I just want to ask you about the relationship between Taiwan and Japan. There is no formal diplomatic relationship. However, members of the two ruling parties about 10 days ago, they had their first bilateral security talks. And that's pretty significant because Japan has skin in the game in a big way. So the meeting between the Taiwanese parliamentarians and the Japanese parliamentarians is significant, is it not?
Right. The talk actually took place last Friday, even though the talk itself didn't really produce a lot of new materials or new talking points for groundbreaking collaborations between Taiwan and Japan. But nonetheless, representatives from both sides, especially from the Japanese side, acknowledged the importance of that talk. Essentially, and they also highlighted and acknowledged the fact that even though, because Taiwan and Japan do not have official diplomatic ties, they cannot have an official exchange between their ministers,
yes.
But an exchange between leading lawmakers focusing on foreign affairs is the kind of conversation and dialogue that will replace the usual talks between ministers. And I think that, again, shows the consistent change of attitude and also the strategy and discussion inside Japan's domestic politics about the threat coming from China and the importance of changing their ways and also increasing the frequency of their exchanges with Taiwan on multiple fronts. They not only work with allies like the United States to talk about how to handle the situation around the region between Taiwan, Japan, and China, but at the same time, they're also more active in playing roles in the Indo-Pacific region, not only just for security roles, but they have also, as we have seen already, increasing their diplomatic presence in the in the region. So I think that is basically essentially a very important development, and also a development that is consistent with what a lot of the experts have pointed out as Japan's increasing security concern about China's roles.
Yes, and in Hong Kong, it was on the streets in the protests, it was mostly younger people who were leading. And I saw some polling recently about Taiwan, and it suggested that it is the younger generation, that is most anxious, shall we say, about China's belligerence. And I take it they have the most to lose. Your generation has the most to lose if China continues with its aspiration to unite China completely by taking Taiwan.
I think that is definitely the consideration that the Chinese government is thinking about, especially after almost now taking almost total control over Hong Kong and yes. dismantling the civil society over there. They thought they could basically just use the same strategy that they've been using in Hong Kong on Taiwan. But then there is also a realization that they need to use even more extreme and also forceful ways to increase the pressure on Taiwan, and also to dismantle the structure, civil society structure in Taiwan. So
when Kamala Harris talked about, and I'm quoting her, Beijing continuing to coerce, to intimidate, and to make claims in the South China Sea, what form of intimidation are we talking about? Was she talking about? What kind of coercion?
I believe the coercion towards Taiwan is multifaceted. It includes the very, very, it basically includes military security threats that they've been doing for years now. There is also the economic attempt to try to influence and also pressure countries that are trying to build closer ties with Taiwan.
Yes.
And then there is also the diplomatic pressure that we've also been seeing over the last few years, that they've been snatching away multiple diplomatic allies from Taiwan. So the kind of pressure that Taiwan is experiencing is a multi-level kind of pressure. And it's only going to increase or expand, but not, dwindle the size of and the scope of the so-called pressure on Taiwan.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Just in that context, William, after Afghanistan and after the mess that the British and the Americans made of leaving, in fact, after Donald Trump had reached an agreement, which he did in 2020, with the Taliban, there is a palpable sense in the West of fractured alliances and self-interest and a real lack of strong leadership from either the United States or from Britain. And the EU, of course, is fairly mute on the issues. And indeed, the EU may well be about to strike a major trade deal with the Chinese. Are all of these regarded, in your view, as bad omens?
I think maybe not necessarily an immediate definitive factors that will change people's views here about China, but about these Western countries' commitment. But there's definitely more increased awareness about the fact that even though these Western countries led by the United States have been talking about how much they wanted to commit their resources and their attention to this part of the world. But at the end of the day, the only power and the people that they can trust is themselves, because relying on themselves is always more important than actually completely setting all their hopes into the commitment made by the United States and all these Western yes. countries. But I believe there is also some kind of observation about how consistent the policies from the West will remain yes. from one administration to another, because what we saw from the Trump administration to the Biden administration, at least in foreign policy-wise, the fundamental policies remain pretty much the same, but the style of execution is definitely very different. So they remain observant about what might come out of it.
Just a final question about China, William, and President Xi and his ambitions. How has he and how does he continue to change China and to, in his mind, progress China towards its ultimate goal?
I think it is essentially strengthening the control of the central government itself. And then, from there on, to try to strengthen and also to try to increase the loyalty and also the conformity of the all aspects of the country, actually, to the central government's leadership. We've been seeing that from the ongoing consistent crackdown on tech giants, on different sectors of society. The latest one is the crackdown on the video the rules about how underage individuals and the number of hours that they will be able to spend on playing video games.
It's 3 hours a day, right. Isn't it?
3 hours a week. And so
three hours
that,
a week.
right. So that shows the level of control that the Chinese government wants to reach when it comes to because they believe that by having a very central government-led style of governance, then they will make sure that everything is very consistent in China. They're not going to experience any kind of a chaotic situation that they've been often pointing out in Western countries.
Yes.
Or in democratic countries.
Yes.
Right.
Just a final point or a question, really, William. In 20 years ago, or maybe a little longer, there were people in the West who believed that the advent of capitalism, Chinese style, of course, but nevertheless capitalism, would soften China and maybe it would lead to a kind of liberalization. That hasn't happened, has it?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I think most of the experts who had hopes about the engagement policy turning China more towards the embrace of the democracy has already all given up on that. And they've now come to the realization that not only has China not been turning towards that route, rather it's going the other way around, becoming more and more
President Xi,
authoritative.
Yes, and President Xi is no Gorbachev, is he?
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, thank you very much, William, for joining us in Taiwan. William Yang is East Asia correspondent for DW News in Germany and a contributor to the Irish Times. And we're very grateful to William for talking to us on The Stand. We're grateful to William, to all of you for listening. That's all we have time for now. We'll talk to you soon.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.